Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ever since Samantha Irby emerged as a breakout star from the blogosphere, readers have loved her for being an unvarnished truth teller. On her blog and in her best-selling books of essays, Irby exposes a lot, from her battles with Crohn's disease to her addiction to QVC.
My passion is to truly make, like, dirtbag, slacker, black lady stuff, because there is not enough, like, you know, this black lady doesn't have ambition art in the world, and I'm going to try and get it out there.
Recently, Irby made the leap into writing for television on shows like Hulu's Shrill and HBO's Sex and the City reboot, and Just Like That. Doreen Sanfelix, a staff writer for The New Yorker, sees Irby as the ideal chronicler of what she calls the malaise of the millennial condition. When Doreen sat down to talk with Samantha Irby, it was 3 days into the Writers Guild strike.
What changes have happened in the industry that have caused, you know, writers to take the stand that they're taking?
I think the biggest change, and we all know it because it's changed our lives so much, is streaming and the way and sort of the opacity that the producers and studios work under, that, like, you don't even know the ways you're being screwed, right? You just know that, like, your checks are smaller. But the other day I got a residual check from, it was based on my episode from And Just Like That. So big network. We know a lot of people watched it. My residual check was $40. And it's like, you hear about, like, people who work on, who worked on, like, Law and Order, right? Like,
right.
Things that are, like, so syndicated. And they're having a great, they haven't written anything in 20 years, but they're having a great life off those residual checks. That is not possible for writers right now. And I think what makes me feel the worst is, like, there are, like, young, super young people in this industry trying to, like, cobble together, like, enough writing jobs to, like, have writing be their only job, and they can't do that. I was reading a thing about how this person, I can't remember who it was, this writer, the day they found out they got nominated for an Emmy, they were in Target applying for a job. And it's like, we get that that is the reality. Like, I worked in, like, customer service for, like, 15 years, right?
Right.
But I feel like when I was making $15 an hour, like, bagging donuts, my boss wasn't making $200 million that she refused to share with me.
That would be a very, like, weird donut shop.
It was like... But, you know, so, like, the disparity between you and your regular boss is one thing, right? It's like, maybe they have a newer version of the same car you drive. But the difference between the writer's take-home pay and the executive's take-home pay is bonkers. Because, you know, like, Hollywood is weird. If they have their way, you would just move to L.A. immediately, in meetings every 5 minutes. Never sleep, always be hustling. But I think, like, one of the things about coming into this work at 43, I do not have the stamina to hustle. I'm like, oh, I'll have one job, and when that job ends, I'll wait till someone asks me to do another job. So I think all of, like, my fake curmudgeonliness and, like, physical distance has kept me feeling like the same person.
Right, right.
Even though, like, Cynthia Nixon texted me. You know what I mean? It's like, that's her. She's fancy and she lives in my phone. That's not me.
I'd be curious to hear about, you know, how being in the space of the writer's room, where it's a collaborative environment, kind of works with or maybe works against your very much one person kind of essay writing that you do.
I think that TV writing is hard, but also is like maybe the easiest because you have other people to bounce things off of. So like in my own work, I have complete confidence in my brain, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is what I'm going to write about. This is how I'm going to form it. Like, this is the format that feels right, like a list or whatever. And then I write it and then I fix it with my editor and then it's good. And I feel good about that. Like, having a book out in the world, I feel good and confident in what's in it. Mm-hmm. With TV, because I don't fully understand TV and I haven't been doing it long enough to feel like I know what I'm doing, I appreciate the collaboration because I think it all helps to keep me from looking stupid, which is like my biggest fear, is like looking like an idiot. So it's nice to have someone, like if I throw out an insane pitch, to have someone be like, well, that wouldn't work because this, or right. An audience doesn't like that. Or, I mean, even something as basic as like, you know, we have to keep this thread going throughout the episode and you forgot it. Also, like, the writer's room is just like the beginning. Then it's like the showrunner,
right.
And then it goes to the network. The first time I saw an episode of television I wrote, there were lots of stuff. There was lots of stuff on the screen that I didn't write.
And what episode was that? Was it in Works
It was Shrill. It was the pool party episode of Shrill.
Mm-hmm.
And there, when I wrote the script, and you write from an outline that kind of everybody puts together, there was no fight with the boyfriend in my episode. Hmm. And I was like, good. Like, we don't need any men. And then I see the episode and there's a scene I didn't write. And that just sort of, and I wasn't like offended or embarrassed or anything.
Right.
It's just like, oh yeah, okay, that's how it works. What I turn in then goes through so many hands that like, it resembles what I wrote, but maybe not. Jokes get punched up and scenes get taken out, like for time. So I think with TV, I enjoy the collaboration only because it further helps me like let go of control. But in TV, you're just going to get your feelings hurt over and over and over if you like stay married to literally anything you put in a script.
Coming into this conversation, I had this idea that Sam Irby and I would begin by talking about her memoir and then talk seriously about writers' rooms and just like that. And of course, all of that went out the window as soon as she began to speak.
A real sticking spot for me, or like a real sensitive spot for me, is I have always felt, and it gets worse, I think, as my career gets better with not having a college degree, right? Mm-hmm. Like it makes me feel, especially with writing, you know how writers are, they're like, what MFA program
that
did you go to?
Pedigree.
And I'm like, oh, I went to high school. I don't even have a bachelor's degree. I certainly don't have an MFA. And like people who are all chummy from their grad school programs and, they exclude. And then you add to it that I write a lot of filth and it makes people take me less seriously. So because I have thought of myself as like undereducated, whenever anyone has criticized my choice in book to read, I have the feeling of like, oh, I guess I didn't know any better that this was a bad thing to consume.
Right.
And I don't want to feel bad because some random person wanted to make me feel bad. Since I started doing I Like It, which is like, let's say you're reading Gone Girl, which is one of my favorite books. And I don't think it's trashy, but some people do. And someone says, like, oh, that book is bad for women. First of all, am I going to give a feminist lecture off the top of my head to some asshole who just wants to be rude to me? No, I'm physically incapable. But what I can do is go, oh, well, I like this book. And then the person does not expect you to say that. They're basically standing there waiting for you to apologize to them for liking something that they don't deem worthy. And then it gets a little awkward. And then I just keep doubling down. I just keep going, I like it.
Right.
And it has been, it's a tiny, handy tool to just like get people off you. I feel like right now, and I don't know if it's social media or just a general hostility in the air, but like everyone is just like waiting to judge you.
Right.
But for something that doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like nobody's seen me kicking a puppy, right? Or yelling at a kid. Those are the kinds of things I'd be worried about, like someone finding out about me. Not that I am deep into all the Real Housewives, you know? And like the fact that I also, this is a thing with you as a critic. It's like, I know you, I trust you. If you say everything you say about a thing, I'm like, I know this person. I trust her. I believe what she says about this show. I trust her analysis, like the whole thing. Joe Blow on the street, like they're not a trained critic. They don't know how to consume things in a critical way. They're as stupid as I am. I'm going to feel bad because they like don't want me to read John Grisham. No, I refuse. I refuse. There are so many things to feel bad about, and I do. Taking back my taste,
yeah.
Defending my taste is a thing that is worth it to me. I'm going to start standing up for the things that make me happy.
Yeah.
I love Billions. I mean, I watch Succession too.
But they're both.
Billions is good.
Right. And they both are doing like actually very different things. And it makes me wonder like what your relationship is to the real fever that got like, you know, created when And Just Like That came out, because there was so, and you talk about this in the essay collection as well, but there was a real like, you know, this is our baby, you have to do right by our baby, even though you guys had a different mandate that you were pursuing.
Even as a Sex and the City like bona fide super fan, I was not ready for like the fire hose of opinions, and also and like the bad, you know, reviews and recaps or whatever. Like I am the last name on the writer list. Like I decide nothing. I had to unsubscribe from people's newsletters.
Oh gosh.
I was listening to this NPR podcast. I was in the shower, so I didn't see it was going to the next episode, which was about And Just Like That. So I'm listening on my little shower speaker because I'm fancy. And at one point, like one of the women on the panel is like, were there any Black people in the room? And the host is like, you know, Samantha Irby was in there. She's Black. And the person says, well, all skin folk ain't kinfolk.
Wow.
When I tell you I almost fell out of the shower, and like that is the kind, like, okay, I am not Black enough to this person who has no idea who I am, and I didn't bring any changing Blackness into the room. I have betrayed the entire race by not taking over this show and casting all Black people. And it's like, when people go to things like that, it's like, what can you do?
Right.
I can't call that girl and be like, oh, so actually, I'm a Black Panther. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing to do. So it was so overwhelming. It was so overwhelming.
You were so important in your anticipation of what body positivity did to a lot of people in terms of their, you know, actually making much more grotesque their relationships to their bodies because it mm-hmm. did not allow them to have honesty about how it is that they feel about like living in this meat sack.
Yeah.
And one of your pieces that I love is your profile of Lizzo in Time, because here's this person who is so, as you had, you know, really beautifully articulated this idea of body negativity, which is kind of mm-hmm. tongue in cheek, but also very mm-hmm. real. And then there you are being set against, you know, just like the absolute patron saint of body positivity. And I love that like little tension there.
Yeah, that was tough for me because, and I wonder, I sometimes vacillate between like, am I jealous or is what they're doing wrong, right? Hmm. Because I would never be in my underwear in any photograph ever, right? Like, I would never be photographed with a tank top on. That is not the relationship I have with my body. And I have no problem with other people who do, like no outward problem, but I do feel like some resentment because I'm not that way, right? I'm like, these people are out in bikinis and they're having a great time. I cannot do that. I hate her, you know, not hate, but you know what I mean?
Right.
So when they approached me about talking to Lizzo, I was just like, I'm not going to turn it down. It's Time Magazine, but also.
So this was a profile of Lizzo that Time reached out to.
Yeah, it was their 100 notable something
like that. Most important people in the world.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm certainly not going to inject a whole lot of, but you can't love your body all the time, right? You know, Time Magazine was not wanting that from me. And I feel like if no one talks about the stuff that's bad or the stuff they don't like, or that they woke up this morning and their shoulder hurts and they wish they had a different body, it's like there has to be space for all of that. The you go girl of it all, and this is not about Lizzo, but just in generally, is so hard, especially when you consider like accessibility for very fat people, right? Medical care for very fat people. I think that's a thing that we lose in the body positivity of it all is, you know, you see somebody with a burrito belly, you know, in a bathing suit, and it's like, oh, that's so brave. And like, great, maybe it is, but why are airplane seats so small? And why, you know, why are theaters like made for like people in the 1920s mm-hmm. or whatever? It's like,
vanity sizing is another thing, right?
Oh my God, it's so real. And I think sometimes that people think like the struggle is over because we see fat women in bathing suits on our feeds and like Old Navy is making, you know, 4X or whatever. And I think like with those kind of, with putting the lipstick on the pig, as it were, no pun intended, is great. I love the visuals. I went to Target and saw my girl in one of their jeans ads on the wall. I was very excited. But then you can't like buy the size clothes she wears in the store because they don't stock the fat clothes. So then as a fat person, you got to remember what you liked. Go home, see if they make it in your size, get it, have it fit weird, send it back. You know what I mean? It just is like, truly my only beef with the like love yourself of it all is that you're trying to in a society that hates your guts I was listening to, I don't even know, some podcast, and the host was talking about how, like, you know, white men are the last people it's acceptable to make jokes about. And I was like, okay, sir, there are fat jokes everywhere in everything that you watch all the time. There's no warning. You'll be watching a soap opera and then somebody will like say something. It's like, it's in the culture. It's people on the street will say things to you. It's just like, I don't want everything to be boiled down to like, whether you're okay wearing shorts outside in the summer.
Right, right.
Because that's like the least of the issues.
Sam, it was so great to talk with you.
So, this really made my day. Oh, you are the best. Gosh. When are we getting a Doreen St. Felix book?
Wait, what? What did you say? Sorry, the feed is dropping
The New Yorker's Doreen St. Felix speaking with writer Samantha Irby. Irby's new collection of essays is called Quietly Hostile. HBO's And Just Like That returns for a second season in June.